This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Governor Cuomo reached a deal overnight with state lawmakers to legalize recreational marijuana here in New York City at City Hall. Mayor de Blasio says he supports that move. The bill would expunge criminal records for anyone with a previous marijuana conviction. It would also allow users to grow their own plants at home and allow people to possess up to 3 ounces of cannabis and 24 ounces of cannabis concentrate.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. Thanks for joining me today. We've got a lot to get into. You just heard that audio. I don't know where you stand on marijuana and whether or not you support recreational pot. I know some are concerned about where it could lead. ABC News will bring more information in a moment. I'll share some big news for the state of New York and really for the rest of the country. We're going to see this continue to ripple out across it. Hey, good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It's wonderful to be with you today, and we have a lot to get into. It is Spy Wednesday. We'll take a look at everything from immigration to forgiveness today. As you know, it's always a mixed bag here, so pull up a chair, hang out with me for a couple hours, and I'll give you a look at both life and faith. It'll be good to do that with you. One of the toughest issues I deal with as a broadcaster here, as a Catholic, really, is the immigration issue. And right now, we are having a serious situation on our border. I just saw a story of a child that was thrown into a river by these cartel members who are, you know, trafficking people to our border illegally, and they broke the legs of the mother for some reason. But thank God the child was saved. But it's a brutal journey for a lot of people. And the Biden administration has finally allowed journalists into some facilities along the Texas border yesterday. And I know you probably have already seen some of the video. We talked about it briefly yesterday. A CBS reporter named Nicole, I think it's Skanga is the man's last name, or her name, I should say, said, look, we saw a pod designed for 32 immigrants under the CDC guidelines. It's 32 migrant children is supposed to hold, right? She says it's now holding 615. How do you do that? How do you get 615 people into a facility designed for 32 migrants? You're hearing the number of 700% over capacity. That's normal capacity. I saw a report earlier today from CBS. Just to give you a scope of how intense this is, and these numbers are going to continue to go up, they were saying, based on the pandemic capacity restrictions, they are 1,700% over capacity. So you're talking about some serious problems there on the border. And again, you do have COVID. There's a lot of unvaccinated people who are coming in. There's a lot of people who may be carriers, and they're all in a very confined and very crowded space. Over 2,000 migrants have been there for over the legal limit of about 72 hours. And, they have to be processed. They're waiting to be transferred to HHS facilities. The HHS has no place to put them. So say a prayer, would you? One official told reporters that at least 39 unaccompanied migrant children, 39 unaccompanied migrant children. I could never send my child off by themselves, regardless of how bad the situation was around me. I mean, it has to be really bad. They are now in a temporary processing facility. Some have been there for 15 days. The legal limit is 72 hours. So it is a mess. I'll continue to take a look at it in the days ahead, because this is a problem that's not going to go away. And those numbers, as shocking as they are, I think they're only going to increase. So, hey, let's talk New York for a moment. You know, Governor Cuomo making a lot of news. Well, he did it again, this time not for scandal, this time not for nursing homes or COVID. New York has become the largest state to legalize recreational marijuana. In fact, the legislature passed a bill last night. The governor signed it this morning. It goes into effect immediately. Here's more from ABC News on the potential of legal pot. Listen.
Cuomo's office says the move could create 30 to 60,000 jobs and boost state revenues by $350 million. This morning, we are hearing from both sides of the debate, critics like the head of the state PTA, who are concerned what reducing penalties will look like for children smoking weed, and Mayor de Blasio, who supports this.
I want to make sure it's done in a way that, respects the rights of localities and really empowers economically the communities that were most hurt by the previous drug laws. I think this bill goes a long way. I think there's more to do after, but it goes a long way.
So drug dealers could sell marijuana to our children under the age of 21 and walk away with a slap on the wrist. We have absolutely no idea why the governor's office felt it was necessary to make dealing drugs to children easier. Shocked by this.
I'll tell you why they're doing it. It's all about money. We shouldn't be shocked. Yeah, we really shouldn't. You know, it's all part of the social equity architecture that they're trying to construct. And they make the claim that this cannabis tax revenue is going to be reinvested into the community. I hope I'm totally wrong. I hope it's going to be good for New York. As you talk about drug dealers getting a slap on the wrist when they're selling your underage kids drugs, that's a problem. And I have no idea what this means. You know, for people who have been previously charged with possession of the drugs, are they all going to be released? Are they going to be using tax revenues for social programs at the local level? I mean, it doesn't say anything about having a population high on weed and how that's going to increase the need. I don't know how it's going to do anything but increase the need for social programs, really. Hey, one other note. CNN, they... This is one of these issues. You know, I've talked a lot about the Equality Act in the past. And, I just try to give you a very clear look at some of the insanity that is now being put forth as though it's normal, as though it's right, as though it has always been this way. Things that just defy biology and common sense. And apparently CNN doesn't seem to have that basic understanding of human biology. In a minute, I'm going to bring Jake on. He found a very compelling piece of audio. And it kind of really contradicts what they're now doing. There was a breaking news reporter who wrote a story about South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's battle with the state legislature over boys who identify as girls playing on a girls' sports team. And again, we've been talking about that. It's been going on for a little bit. And the reporter included this sentence. So let me just share the sentence. I want to quote it. Quote, "It's not possible to know a person's gender identity at birth." Can I repeat that one more time in case you missed it? It's not possible to know a person's gender identity at birth. What? There is no consensus criteria for assigning sex at birth. I mean, that's literally what this person wrote. So I guess all these nurses and doctors and midwives and everybody else says, hey, congratulations, it's a boy or it's a girl. You know, we've been doing this for millennia, right? They're all wrong. You just can't. It's not possible. It's not possible to know a person's gender identity at birth. So I find that striking coming from a news source that's supposed to broadcast truth. And Jake, I know you found something that they put forth. You know, they like to say science is science and be very clear on that. You found something which you got to share with everyone.
They always seem to say follow the science, but only the science that they believe in, right? I mean, I found this in a way to show that CNN was almost incriminating themselves because they were running this ad, and I don't know exactly when it was, but it was within the past couple of years, and it was definitely during the Trump administration where what they were doing was trying to, you know, call out the, as they like to say, alternative facts. So they were calling out conservatives for believing what they saw as false information. And so they, on the screen, just to give you a picture, they had a picture of an apple. And they kept saying over and over again, this is an apple. And again, it seems to contradict what they're saying about gender.
This is an apple. Some people might try to tell you that it's a banana. They might scream banana, banana, banana over and over and over again. They might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana. But it's not. This is an apple.
So maybe that apple fell on CNN's head and got them into a state of delirium thinking that you can't prove gender, but I don't know. It's pretty ridiculous, you know?
It's bizarre. I mean, we've talked about knowing one's gender by, you know, the chromosomal makeup of the individual. And there's some biological markers. There's some just very basic biology that says this person is a male and this person is a female. And yet we're willing to throw all that away. We live in this very bizarre time. And it's the only word I can use for it. I mean, we live in a woke culture where woke doctrine is being shoved at our kids. There's a new organization that's been formed to try to fight this so-called woke doctrine in education, because that's really what they're now targeting on. If you take a look at the culture, and if you've got kids or grandkids, I mean, you should be concerned about what you're seeing here, because they realize, okay, you might be formed already in your belief system. You might have already passed your biology class, right? You might already say, hey, rationality and common sense says this doesn't make sense, right? Well, they're saying, well, let's indoctrinate your kids. That's what we'll do. And they do it at the higher levels of education. You see the liberal attitudes and ideology that often affects, you know, your kids at that level. But now they're not just going after college educated, that demo. They're going after high school and even grade school. Parents Defending Education, to help empower parents to stand up to increasing rise of this liberal ideology. That's the group that is now out there. And you can find them online. And I'll give you this website, because if it concerns you, it might be well worth looking at. Maybe I'll have them on the air in the future. DefendingED.org, okay? And it looks like they might be needed at Loyola Academy in Chicago, which is a pretty elite Catholic school. I'm surprised. I mean, students in an 11th grade ethics class, right? Check this out. They had a series of questions like this one on the test. See how you'd answer it, right? What have you learned about the ways that you have specifically wielded the privilege that do harm, whether intended or not? Dig deep. No sugarcoating, no focusing on the good that you've done with your privilege. Remember, this isn't being, you know, self-congratulatory. It's about pulling out white supremacy. And again, it's this mantra, this doctrine, this ideology that if you are white, you know, you're bad. That's what it is. You got to root that out of everything. Think about it. What have you learned about the way you've wielded your white privilege? How did you wield your white privilege? Come on, dig deep. No sugarcoating. No focusing on the good that you've done. Forget that. What have you done with your privilege? Remember, this isn't about being self-congratulatory. It's about pulling out white privilege. Dr. Carol Swain was on the program with me yesterday, and she is incredibly eloquent. You can go back to Hour 3 yesterday. She's a conservative commentator. She has her own program called Be the People. She sought to dispel the notion of white privilege. And listen to her comment.
Perhaps the most persistent myth is the myth of white privilege. You know, the idea that there's something about having white skin that gives you special privileges in America? Well, you tell that to the single mom working at Waffle House and to the unemployed white men of Appalachia. We are told that there are far more whites in positions of power. Whites are incarcerated at lower rates than blacks. Whites aren't harassed by the police, and the list goes on and on. Ignored in those discussions are many facts that would explain those differences. Lately, black protesters have been demonstrating at brunch restaurants in New York City to protest so-called white spaces. Now, independently of the fact that it's foolish to invade other people's private property, what we don't hear from all these protesters is that it's education and strong families, not some sort of racial aristocratic privilege, that determines one's level of success in life. We need only to look at Asian American families for evidence of what makes for success in America. Only 13% of Asian American children live in single parent homes, compared with 55% of black children. Unemployment is 11.4% for blacks and 4.5% for Asians. There's no escaping the fact that education and family structure play a huge role in the success and failure of racial and ethnic groups. It's time we stop the silly discussion about white privilege and instead devote ourselves to teaching others about the ingredients for success in America.
Again, that's Dr. Carol Swain. I'll tell you, if you want a good conversation, Hour 3 yesterday, go back and listen to it in my podcast. Okay, Hour 3, just look for her name. It's the second half of Hour 3, but it's well worth, I think, listening to. She brings up some really cogent, very salient points. Joining me in just a moment, Father Paul Solons is going to be here. And as I say to you, I try to give you a look at what's happening in the culture, but I also try to give you a look at what's happening in the church. And I think it's what makes what I do here a little bit different than maybe a lot of your other networks that are out there. I try to give you a moral look at what's happening. COVID has impacted our lives. It has impacted your lives in a way probably you've never imagined. From, you know, packed grocery store lines. Remember what it was like when there was no toilet paper on the shelves, stores being closed, streets empty, parking lots empty, airplanes empty. It was an experience for a generation or more. But it also impacted church. And I don't know how it has impacted your faith, whether or not you've fallen away from going back to church now or your kids have. I find it hard to believe, but there was a recent Pew study, and they found that a mere 5% of Catholic churches around the country are currently open. I find that hard to believe. We're going to get that from Father Paul Solon's coming up here in just a second. That's up slightly from the 3% that was open last, I think, July. But here's another more disturbing statistic. That Gallup organization found less than half of Americans now belong to a church, a synagogue, or a mosque. ABC News will bring you the latest stats on religious practice in America.
To religion, as Christians around the world observe Holy Week, we take a look at the dramatic decline in church membership in the U.S. by the numbers. 47% of Americans said that they belong to a church, synagogue, or mosque in 2020, according to a new Gallup study. It's the first time in 83 years of Gallup polling that membership in a house of worship has dropped below 50% in this country. In 1937, 73% of Americans belonged to a house of worship, and that share remained steady near 70% for six decades before rapidly declining after 1999, according to Gallup. 21% of Americans now say that they don't identify with any religion. And that's a dramatic increase from the 8% who said that from 1998 to 2000. And perhaps it's no surprise that there's a wide generational gap. 66% of Americans born before 1946 say that they belong to a church, compared to 58% of baby boomers, 50% of Gen Xers, and only 36% of millennials. And finally, whether or not they attend a house of worship, 28% of people say that their personal faith is stronger because of the COVID-19 pandemic, according to a recent Pew study.
Yes. I don't know where you fall in those numbers, but here to give us some perspective, also we'll take your calls, is Father Paul Sullins. He's an emeritus professor of sociology at Catholic University in Washington, in D.C. Right now, he is senior research associate at the Ruth Institute. It's great to have him here with us today. Hey, Father, welcome. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. It's so happy. I'm so happy to be with you this afternoon. So when we talk about church participation, you know, there are three measures that interact. One is affiliation. When Gallup does a survey, they say, "What is your religious preference, or whatever you think of yourself as?" And if it's someone might say, "Well, I'm Catholic," or "I'm Baptist," or whatever, and then they'll do a follow-up question and say, well, are you a member of a specific congregation? Or for Catholic, are you registered in a church? And a smaller proportion will say, I'm registered or I'm a member. And then they might ask, well, how often do you actually attend? And so a smaller proportion of that will say they actually attend. So for Catholics, we're pretty steady on affiliation. You got 60-65%. Of Americans will identify as Catholic, and then membership, only about half that amount will actually be registered members in a church. And then for attendance, it goes, unfortunately, down by half again, about. So we have the more participation, the more effort you have to put into kind of the measure, the fewer people are involved. And all three of those measures have been dropping in tandem for the past 20 years.
So,
it seemed like the turn of the millennium began the end of, or began the decline in American religion generally, as the clip you just played noted. It's a generational decline. It's not something that churches are necessarily, or any individual churches necessarily, doing differently or wrong or not attracting people like they used to. It's a cultural shift, and it's centered in young people. Young people today do not see the point of engaging in organized religion.
So, Father, why is that? That's the big question. I mean, why has the secularization of our society continued at such a pace over the last 20 years that more than 20% of Americans have stopped claiming to be a member of a church? And we see these NONES, it's actually over 20%, but I mean, what is it that's driving them out of organized religion?
Yeah, I'd say two things. One is the sexual revolution, which stands athwart the teachings of most churches. A church will say to you, don't have sex outside of marriage, but almost all young people today do that. They say you should get married, have children, live a meaningful life with a spouse, and a lot of young people don't want to do that. The LGBT issues are really huge in this with young people. They come almost to revile churches and church membership, people who believe what churches teach and the influence of churches because it stands against some of these things. So it gets a little bit into the woke issues too. So that'd be the first thing. It's kind of young people are getting married less, having children less, and so on and so forth. The second I just touched on was this idea of social desirability. A lot of these measures don't actually measure actual church participation. They measure desired church participation. For instance, that 70% of Catholics who say they're affiliated as Catholics, we never had 70% of the population actually participating in Catholic churches. People who have looked at how many of those are members, as I've said, only about half that many turn out to be members. Well, what are the other half? They say that they're Catholic, but you can't find them, no Catholic church that they belong to. And so sociologists have called those mental members. They're people who maybe think of themselves as members, but aren't really active members. And that's true for a lot of Americans, a lot of older Americans. Who are, you know, more religious in terms of affiliation, but really are not, don't participate at the rate that they'll affiliate. I think, rightly or wrongly, I think of Donald Trump on this. You know, he proclaims he's Presbyterian, and that's a very respectable religion. Somebody who's proud of being Presbyterian, but he doesn't participate very much.
Yeah, that's true.
So he thinks of himself as Presbyterian, but he's not really a very faithful or active.
And Father, I wish we had more time. I want to wish you a blessed Holy Week. And thank you for your time and your contribution over the years. It's always so insightful. Well, keep us in your prayers. We'll do the same thing for you. I'm going to pray the chapel in a few minutes, okay?
Thank you, Drew. God bless you. God bless all your listeners.
God bless you. That's Father Paul Solins. I'll be right back.
The most powerful personal prayer at Mass was written by a guy who wasn't even baptized. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 37th lesson on the Mass. It's the Lord I Am Not Worthy prayer, and it was an unbaptized Roman soldier who made it up. Right before Holy Communion, the priest genuflex takes the host and holding it slightly raised above the paten or above the chalice while facing the people says aloud, "Behold the Lamb of God, behold him who takes away the sins of the world, blessed are those who are called to the supper of the Lamb." And together with the people he adds once, "Lord, I am not worthy that you should enter under my roof, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed." Lord, I am not worthy. These are some of the most famous words ever spoken, and they're repeated daily by tens of millions of Catholics at Mass right before Holy Communion.
Hi, Drew Mariani here.
We need God's mercy more than ever.
The Divine Mercy Chaplet, part of the Drew Mariani Show. 3 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forest.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. It's truth, hope, and a look at life you won't get anywhere else.
Well, good afternoon. I hope that is indeed true for you. I'm always trying to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. You heard earlier about that CNN reporter who was reported in a news story that, and I'll just quote it one more time for you, that it's not possible to know a person's gender identity at birth, right? That's the most wacky statement I've heard, you know, in a long time. What do you mean? You know, it's not possible to know a person's gender or identity at birth. Well, yeah, it's why doctors and nurses say, hey, it's a boy, it's a girl, right? The person said, there's no consensus criteria for asserting sex at birth. You know, it's just that's kind of the wackiness of the time we're in, where people can really justify, embrace, even write about as if though that is reality. But it shows the absolute disconnect that some in our society have and the way they're thinking about biological realities. And those realities, they're really the differences between the two sexes, right? I mean, this is not complicated stuff. There are only two sexes, not three, not three dozen, or whatever number the imaginary powers, you know, they want you to believe. These are the realities that doctors have to deal with on a daily basis. And I've been telling you about the Equality Act now for weeks. If that piece of legislation, if the Equality Act is, you know, if it becomes law, it's now being debated in the Senate. If it gets passed, doctors and other medical personnel, they're going to be dealing with a whole lot of confusion. And I think there will be doctors who will resign, retire, maybe even lose their jobs, depending on whether or not they want to give hormone blockers or remove genitalia or do things that they know aren't right. The bill requires that doctors go along with whatever the patient says. So if a 10-year-old girl, 15-year-old girl, whatever, right? Somebody comes into the doctor's office without their parent, without the mother or the father, says, you know, I'm a boy and I want the doctor to start treating me like a boy. The doctor under this bill would have no choice but to do that. So there's no room in the bill for protecting the conscience of doctors or nurses or any other medical professional who's taken the oath. And most doctors today, not everybody does it anymore, but they take that Hippocratic oath to do no harm, right? Do no harm. That's one of the key aspects of that commitment. Of course, there's also the fact that, look, this bill tramples your rights, right? As a parent, I want to know what the heck my kid is doing. I certainly don't want my daughter or my son going into some doctor's office and doing something that will be harmful or deleterious to their future. I mean, they're not making a right decision. They're not informed. They don't know better. They bought into the culture lie, right? A parent is there to protect. They are the primary educators of their children. And for this bill to trample on your rights, you know, including medically, you know, it says stuff like places like shelters for battered women have to be open to men who claim to be women. How do you think that's going to go with a woman who just went through that kind of trauma? And look, the list goes on. I'm not going to get into all the Equality Act today. We've talked about it in the past. That's where we are right now. I'd like to welcome to the program Dr. Gracie Christie. She's a policy advisor for the Catholic Association, and she also practices radiology in the Miami area, and it's always good to have her with us. You can check her out at catholicassociation.org. Hey, doctor, thank you for your time. As always, it's a delight to have you here.
No, thank you for having me, and on such a great topic of so much interest.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're a radiologist, so you probably won't see, I would think, much of this kind of stuff. But what about pediatricians, you know, the colleagues of yours, for instance, or obstetricians or others? Is there any concern about this at all? I don't know if everyone is aware of it, but do you see a looming problem on the horizon?
Oh, if this bill passes, the Equality Act, it is it's a poison pill, not only for the medical profession, but for patients' parents. It's poison. The Equality Bill is poison when it comes to medicine. And it goes even further than you said, Drew. You said that a doctor or a therapist would not be able to treat a patient, would not be able to do what the parents would want and not affirm a patient's gender confusion. It goes further than that. Neither the patient nor the doctor nor the patient's parents could opt for any other treatment besides affirming this psychological disturbance, which is gender dysphoria. Which, wow. Imagine that. Imagine a federal government mandating one treatment, one blanket treatment for a psychological disturbance, and mandating it so that if you don't do it, it's called discrimination, and you could lose your job and God knows what else.
So, doctor, you're a parent. You are, I believe, the mother of five children, right? You have a husband. It would concern me as a parent. I'm a parent. I've got five kids, too. How did we get to this point? I mean, what's the end goal here? You know, what is this agenda?
The agenda is to wreck society, basically, to wreck the beauty of a society that is sane, that is ordered around families, that is ordered around the safety of children. It's even meant to wreck our relationship with reality, as you were saying in your introduction. The reality, which is so apparent even to a toddler can tell who's a woman and who's a man. Probably by 2 years old or even earlier, a child can tell people sex. So something that is so obvious as sex differences, we are meant now, because the government might just decide it by fiat, we are meant to ignore reality completely in every aspect of our lives, including medicine and psychology.
Mm. Now, you know, when an X-ray is taken, doctor, most of the time the genital area is protected, you know, from the effects of radiation, as you know. What if the patient said, no, I don't want that. I don't want to protect them. Do you have to go along and say, okay, fine, you know, you're at risk? You know, what would the Equality Act require a tech or doctor to do? And that's kind of a bizarre case. It's not as dramatic as somebody saying, hey, I want hormone blockers, or I want my breast removed or my genitalia removed. But in a case like that, are there any limits in terms of you know, how far this can go?
Well, according to the Equality Act, there are no limits, because what it says very specifically that any time that a person encounters medicine, whether it's psychological or anything physical, a medical professional, if the medical professional does not treat them according to what they believe about themselves sexually, that is a case of discrimination. So if a person, you know, says, well, I'm not meant to have these breasts, so you as a plastic surgeon should remove them, the surgeon can't say, you know, I don't remove healthy breasts, because that would be wrong. It's wrong to remove healthy organs from healthy people, and I would be doing you a great disservice. That would be called a case of discrimination.
Wow. So what would happen if a physician refused to go along with what somebody, or even a child, you know, wanted to do? They lose their license, they lose their job. What happens?
Well, what happens these days when you're accused of discrimination? Don't you lose everything?
You do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do.
I call the Equality Act a malignant octopus. It has 1,000 tentacles ready to be inserted into every part of our lives and poison us.
So we're essentially becoming a society run by people who believe in make-believe, right? I mean, whatever you mm-hmm. want goes. I think often of even this Equality Act when it comes to, you know, just gender. I mean, as a physician, I mean, we know there's chromosomal differences between a male and a female. I mean, you can clearly tell who's a male and who isn't, along with everything. Females have two, you know, X chromosomes. Males have an X and a Y. It's like, you know, the animal kingdom's also divided between male and female sexes. It is just so bizarre that we have gotten to this point. If you want to join the conversation, let me take some calls here, too. Our number, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And, doctor, stay with me. I have to take a real quick break. When we come back, we'll take some calls for you as we continue to take a look at the Equality Act and how it's impacting physicians and much more. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Thanks for joining us. Hey, if you like the look at life you get here, tell one other person about it. Get them plugged in. All right? Of course, we'll pray the chaplain at the top of the hour. So hang out with me and be sure we do that. We'll pray for some sanity, for some rationality, for some clarity, and let's pray for some protection, especially over those who hold the truths of God's natural law. I saw a story, too, and before we go to your phone calls, and I'm grateful for them, Jake, I want to talk a little bit about this professor who refused a school order on using transgender pronouns. And this is one of those really wacky things, too, because it's not just one or two pronouns. I mean, they continue to get larger and larger. And I know he was a philosophy professor and a devout Christian, and he actually sued the state. What happened there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Professor Nicholas Merriweather, he recently won the ruling. It was the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in his favor, saying that the university that he was working at essentially did not have the right to force him to use those gender pronouns. So it is a win for religious freedom and certainly a breath of fresh air for us who, you know, when we're tired of hearing about those Supreme Court or religious freedom losses, it's a good step. And he was on Fox News not long ago, and he talked about why exactly he took that stance.
Okay, so just to give people a little bit of a background, there was a student who was in your class, biologically born male, but transitioning to female, asked that you use female pronouns. And professor, I know there were different compromises that you and the school talked about, just using the first name or the last name. Eventually, you could not come to an agreement, and you said, using these pronouns is a violation of my religious beliefs. How so?
It's important to remember that the university is to be a marketplace of ideas and not merely an assembly line for one type of thought. And in this particular case, I was being required to endorse an ideology that I do not hold. I don't think that public universities should be in the business of requiring people to endorse or express ideologies that they don't hold.
I thought that was such a great response. I just love that quote. And if we held that kind of approach to some of this legislation that's coming our way, I think people may look at it a little bit differently, because if the Equality Act becomes a reality, it's their way or you're on the highway. That's the bottom line. I'm joined today by a very gifted physician, and if you want to join us, feel free to dial in. The number is 888-914-9149. Dr. Gracie Christie is a policy advisor for the Catholic Association and a radiologist in Miami. And doctor, you heard that case too with that professor. I was glad he went to court. He actually won, which was great news. So I think if the Equality Act comes through, there will be a lot of lawsuits, especially coming not just from schools, but I think from the medical community as well. I have several friends who are physicians and surgeons, and I know this would really compromise their morality. So I'm sure we're going to see other challenges in the days ahead. But it's good to have you with
us. What a waste of time and money, right?
It certainly is.
We have to defend ourselves.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's grab a few calls for you. We've got a few moments. If you want to join us, 888-914-9149. John's listening in San Jose, California. We'll start there. Hi, John. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew, and hi, doctor. I really enjoy your program, Drew. I think you're an excellent Catholic and journalist.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, with this gender issue, I was just wondering if this is sort of a misappropriation of law. I always thought that law was based on morals and ethics, but it seems like maybe we got some of our terms, we're redefining some terms like masculine, feminine, male, female. Maybe there's something going on redefining the law that at least I'm not understanding.
Well, John,
well,
thank
this
you.
This law, the equality. Oh, thank you.
No, doctor, go right ahead.
Thank you. So this law, the Equality Act, one of the sections, and you can go online and look at it. You can Google Equality Act PDF and read the text. One section says sex will be defined from now on in all laws and in every statute to mean not male and female, but to mean gender identity, to mean sex stereotypes. So it's really taking the law and using it as a sword to cut through the natural law, which is, you know, the way that we can feel and we can see nature express the laws of God in ways that are incontrovertible. So yes, I agree with you that law is being turned on its head and turned into something different than what it should be.
Yep. All right, John, thank you for the call. Caroline is listening in Fresno. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, happy Holy Week. How are
you? Thank you. I'm well, thank you. You too. Happy Holy Week.
So just a few things that are kind of going through my mind, and this insanity has to stop, is at what point do we, as prudent thinking people, kind of, you know, you express your thoughts and you go, okay, well, what if, how far do we take it? Do we, if people decide to get married and have children, is there something that we're going to have to sign at the doctor, at the hospital, that gives up our rights as parents to say, well, you know, if our child at 5 years old decides that they want to do this, you have no rights. How far do we take it? On top of that, you know, where does it end? Do I say, you know what, I don't identify as a taxpayer. I don't identify, so therefore I'm not doing my taxes.
I'd like to see you try.
As a bird, I identify as a bird. Yep. So I'm going to crawl up in trees and I'm going to jump out and I'm going to hurt myself. And, you know, we all know I'm physically not a bird, but I identify with that. And so you have to treat me as such. Where does it end?
You bring up a great point. The point is that there is no logical end to the idea that reality is something that you can choose, and every individual gets to choose their own reality, and everyone else has to abide by that, even when it violates your own rights as a human being to live in a realistic world and express yourself in realistic terms. So I completely agree with you, and I'd like to see you try identifying as a bird who doesn't pay taxes, because if that works, I'm going to be right there with you.
That's hilarious. Hey, Caroline.
Yeah, and just think how far you can do you take it? Do you say you have a child that goes, I identify as a student from Stanford with a 4.7 that should be on scholarship? So.
Yeah, I think, Caroline, you bring up a great point. Listen to this piece of audio that we have, and I love this. I've played it several times in the past because it just really pulls the mask off of this irrationality, this craziness. You know, I'm a 6'3", you know, Italian man. If I went up to you and I said, hey, I'm actually a 5'4" Chinese woman, and I identify as that, what's the truth? Is it what I believe I am, or is it what you see before your eyes? Jake, play this audio. And first of all, Jake, where did this come from again? I know we played it all the time.
The source of the audio, I don't remember, but I remember that this was like a Christian organization. The guy just went on a campus in Washington and talked to some of the students and asked them these questions.
The man on the street stuff. Listen to this. I love it.
If I told you that I was Chinese, what would your response be?
I mean, I might be a little surprised, but I would say, good for you. Like, yeah, be who you are.
I would maybe think you had some Chinese ancestor.
I would have a lot of questions just because on the outside, I would assume that you're a white man.
If I told you that I was 7 years old, what would your response be?
I wouldn't believe that immediately.
If you feel seven at heart, then then so be it. Yeah, good for you.
So if I wanted to enroll in a first grade class, do you think I should be allowed to?
Probably not, I guess. I mean, unless you haven't completed first grade up to this point and for some reason need to do that now.
If that's where you feel like mentally you should be, then I feel like there are communities that would accept you for that.
I just laugh every time I hear it. Doctor, I love that audio because, you know, if I tell you I'm 7 years old and they're looking at this guy and he's 45, they're like, no, you're not, you know. But we live in a culture now where if you say you are, then you have to be respected and believed as such. And it's so obvious, it's ridiculous. But I love your thoughts on that as well. You heard Caroline, and I loved her comments about not identifying as a taxpayer. Yeah, I'll join her in the jail cell right next to her.
Well, Drew, the whole age issue of identifying as a certain age, that's actually happening already. It's not a question of, oh, how funny that is. It's happening already. People are talking about how you identify as a certain age, and that should be respected. So, for instance, somebody who's 78 who feels very spry and very, very with it and has perfect memory and can walk around the block twice, they say, well, I identify as a 62-year-old, and I demand to be treated that way. Look that up. Look that up, because it's coming down the pike. I wouldn't be surprised if in a year or two we're all pretending people are different ages.
No, my producer, Jake, was telling me, he said, that's true. He says, they're doing it on dating sites, you know? Now I can see, okay, somebody fudges their age by a year or two, but to say that, you know, you are a 55-year-old woman and you're telling somebody you're 35, well, that's a pretty big difference there, so... But again, that's where we go. I just wonder what the limits are. How far does this go before it implodes, before it all falls in on itself?
It reminds me, Drew, of a conversation my husband and I have all the time where I'll say to him, did you know that this or that is happening in this or that state? And he says, that's crazy. That'll never catch on. And I always say to him, Stephen, You said that about the last 14 things I told you, and now we're living them. He says,
so
yeah,
true.
You're right.
It's just so true. Chuck is listening to us in Rhode Island, wants to talk with you too, Doctor. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air with Dr. Gracie Christie. Chuck, go right ahead, brother. I'm going to put you back in queue, Chuck. We'll make sure that you catch up in real time. Frank in Northern California, thank you for doing
that. Before I get into my real question, I wanted to say that hundreds of thousands, even millions of people in America could say, I feel 65 and I want to go ahead and start collecting my pensions, my
like
Social
that.
Security, and my medical benefits today.
I like that too. So true.
I'd like to see you try.
But I was calling, well, if they say that you have to follow that, I was saying that I've been trying to promote in my local area for the high schools and for the little kids to break everything up into chromosomes and have three groups so that you don't neglect other people, that they can then sue you. But if you'd have an XX chromosome competition,
right.
XY chromosome competition,
right.
And then open to all, that way it's open,
right.
It's harder for them to prove this change or perception.
How interesting. I like that. So use science then. Doctor, your thoughts. How do you think that would go over?
Well, I think some states are signing laws to that effect, basically, that there has to be chromosomally divided, the sports, for instance, and other things like shelters, as you mentioned earlier,
right.
Drew, because right. That's the only way to make sure that sports are fair. You know, as a radiologist, I don't have to see a patient's genitalia to tell you what sex they are.
Right.
Men and women are built completely different in their muscle structure and in their bone structure. And we have to go by chromosomes. We cannot go by people's ideas of what they were really meant to be.
Frank, I love your idea. I think that's brilliant.
I'm just trying to be reality. One other thing I just read. Okay.
No, go ahead, Frank. Frank, go ahead. I think we have a little bit of a delay. That's part of the problem. Frank, you there? All right, I'm going to let him go. I would love to hear what else he read. I love his idea, though, because, I mean, how do you misinterpret your chromosomal composition? I mean, you can't. And how do you deviate or in some way distort that? I mean, I don't know how you can. I thought his remarks were great. I'll sneak one more call in if we can. Nashville, Tennessee. Tim's listening to us there. Tim, good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, love the show. Been listening for a long time, and I love
Thanks,
the way
Tim.
You represent Catholics. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm a financial advisor, and one of the things I do is I work with insurance. And in insurance, it's very important to know whether someone is male or female because all the actuarial tables are different based on sex. And if the law changes and says that sex now becomes part of identity,
yep.
I'm concerned about what does that mean for the insurance industry and premiums, and do we have to come up with a whole bunch of different categories that would apply to all these different identities, and what's that going to mean for premiums across the board?
Another great call, Tim. I love that because I never thought of that. You know, what do you do? We know women on average live longer than men. That certainly affects premiums and insurance and everything else. I guess, Doctor, it goes back to Frank's great point of, you know, these actuarial tables will have to be based on your chromosomal composition, right? Or your identification, you know, whether you are XX or XY. How do you resolve these issues? Do we just change the language? Is it a matter of nomenclature now?
Well, when people say the word gender, it's no longer meaning sex anymore. It used to mean that it used to be sort of interchangeable, sex and gender. And now when people say gender, they mean something very
right.
complicated. And when we mean sex, we do mean the chromosomal nature of each person. And I think it's going to have to play out that way because definitely actuarial tables cannot be run on people's
right.
idea of who they ought to be or who they think they are inside.
That's right. That's for sure. Hey, Tim, thank you for the call. Thanks for the kind words. I'm grateful for it.
Thank you.
Frank, thank you. And Doctor, thank you. I got to leave it right there because I'm up against what they call in the business a hard break. It means we'll get cut off if I don't wrap it up here in time. But thank you for your time. Have a great Holy Week, okay? And tell Steve he better start listening to you, okay?
Bless you.
All right. God bless you. All right. It's top of the hour. I'm going to be back on the other side. We'll pray the chat. Let's pray for our country. Let's just pray for those in office. Let's pray for those who are misguided. I mean, we are all brothers and sisters in the Lord. And you and I were chosen to live at this particular moment in time. And, you know, I'm glad that we were, because we can make a difference. We'll pray on the other side. Stay with me. I'll be back right after this.